Hi, everybody. I'm Margaret. I'm an adult child in recovery. I'm an ACA. It's so good to be here. I haven't been here in quite a while. It's so nice to be back and to see a lot of familiar faces, new faces, some people I haven't seen in a while. And thank you, DJ Rich. It was fun to dance and yeah, being here reminds me that I would like to come here more often, and also reminds me that one of the most important things I can do for myself and for all my inner children of any ages, is to feel joy, to have fun, to release energy and emotion and just be free and spontaneous. Those are all things I wasn't able to do for the most part in my childhood when I was a kid. So, yeah, it's such a long share. I don't know if I'll take all the time. I mean, I easily could, but I might not. We'll see what happens. But this is a little like just. I don't want to forget. I want to ask this right off at the top. I discussed it with my therapist yesterday, and she said, that's a great idea. So I am considering going non-contact with my mother. Again, I wasn't in contact with her for about 11 years. Years ago, like 15 years ago. We've been back in contact again for like about 15 years. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I thought that I would do an exercise and yeah, I thought I would write a letter to her because I wouldn't just ghost her or whatever. And so if anyone has cut off contact with a parent or a caregiver, and did it by writing a sort of just like direct, blameless letter as part of it, and is willing to discuss that with me. You can't message now, but you know, I welcome you getting in touch with me, later because I would love to hear other people's experience with that. So backing up a little bit, I've been coming to ACA pretty regularly for, I would say, about 5 years now. I have my emotional support hippo right here. This is a weighted hippo. I got it on Etsy. You can get any color, any pattern, any animal. They're handmade by this woman, and it's like really heavy, so it's like good for holding. I love that other adult children are just like, yeah, that's cool. Like, there's not that I know of, like, other, there may be other meetings where that's practiced regularly, but I'm not sure about that. So, yeah, I probably went to my first. I've been in, you know, I've other meetings like for about 15. Well, I started about 15 years ago in another program, and so yeah, I would say I was living in New York then, and I went to a bunch of meetings like. I want to say like starting around 7 years ago, but it was overwhelming for me. It was very overwhelming. It was just like, just felt so painful and raw to be in those meetings at that time. And so I backed off for a while. And I'll just, you know, I've gotten to the point, I think, in my recovery where in ACA, and I am one of those people. I am an adult child from a dysfunctional family. My parents were not alcoholics or addicts. My stepfather was later on, but my parents weren't. And, you know, I think it's important to say that. I think sometimes that gets lost and people don't know that, you know, we belong here. If our childhood was less than nurturing in any way, and that harmed us and affects our adult experience. So yeah, it's Friday. I'm tired. There might be some pauses while I gather my thoughts. That's okay. So yeah, I was gonna say, like, I'm, you know, my first experience in recovery, kind of mirrored the way I got through childhood, which was I was very one of my, maybe I should just back up and give you a quick, I don't want to like dwell too long on like what my childhood was like, but I think just sort of a snapshot might be a good idea. So my first child, there was, my childhood was kind of divided in half. Like for the first 9 years, I lived with my mother and my father and my two older half siblings. They were 8 and 9 years older than me, and they were my father's kids from his first marriage, which was never discussed. I never heard anything about their mother. They never saw their mother. We never discussed it. And there was a lot of, you know, now I know it was like extreme mental illness, violence. I became practiced at being invisible. I just like would hide in my room and talk to my dolls, my stuffed animals, and I would sort of escape within myself, because there was a lot of violence. You know, my father regularly, like, you know, would beat my mother and my brother and to a certain extent my sister. And I don't think, I don't have a lot of, I think because of the dissociation, I know the events of my childhood, but I can't recall them in a way that you would say is a memory. It's more like something I read in a book. And I don't think that that my father, that I was a recipient of his physical violence, but there was a lot. I mean, he was cruel to animals in front of me, and obviously cruel to my family members in front of me. And my mother committed what I now know is called emotional incest, which is that she put me in the position as a young child of being her partner, her confidant, her best friend, her someone she told things to that, you know, a child shouldn't hear. Though I never was told this explicitly, I very clearly got the message that, you know, I was to be attuned to her. You know, I was to help her feel better. I was her entertainment. I was her companion. I was her respite. I was to make things better for her. And she was very unhappy, very stressed out. You know, very much in a victim role. And she had what they call, you know, battered wife syndrome. I don't know if they call that anymore, but she thought about leaving for a long time and didn't because she was scared. And finally, when I was 9, we left, and I pretty much did not see anyone on my father's side of the family after the divorce. And nothing was ever discussed. Like, I don't know how much my relatives, you know, I had grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. I don't know who knew what about what went on in the home, but nobody ever talked about it. Nobody ever said anything. So I really take the don't talk, don't trust, don't feel thing that we learn here, like, to heart, because and nobody ever had to say explicitly that I wasn't to do those things or that we don't do those things. It was just a self-perpetuating system of that. So as I became a teenager, for a few years it was just me and my mother. My older siblings stayed with my father, and my mother really turned her wrath on me. I'm pretty sure she's has what they call, like, malignant narcissism. She seemed like she was constantly angry at me no matter what I did. She yelled, she criticized, she invaded my privacy in many different ways. And I got through my teen years by, I guess you would call it, workaholism. And I worked on my grades. I got, like, good grades, and I did every extracurricular thing, and I left and hung out with my friends whenever I could, and was just, like, waiting to get away, and went to college, and then had kind of a nervous breakdown. I mean, I think that's, like, the first time that the PTSD, happened. But this was in the, I left for college in, I started college in 1987, and I floundered out there. I won't say floundered, because that sounds like I'm blaming myself for not having help sooner, but for whatever reason, I just didn't, I didn't have a lot of help for a long time, and I just kind of, was like a soldier, really, like, through life, just hanging on, getting through. But I mean, periods of addiction, periods of depression, physical injuries and relationships that were just, like, mystifying me. Just getting into so many scrapes, and just life was really, really fucking hard, for a long, long, long time. And so let's get to the recovery, I guess. My other program that I did started 15 years ago. I knew how to, like, be sort of, like, perfectionism was one of my coping mechanisms back in the day. Like, and by the way, like, I identify as a lost child, a scapegoat, and a shoot, what's the other one? There's three of them that I identify with. It's like the, what's it? Can anyone tell me? I know. It's like a star, but that's not what they call it. Is it the,
It's
anyway.
Golden Child.
Okay, thank you. I think it's that, or they may have another name for it too. Whatever, you get the idea. The good, whatever.
Hero.
Hero. Oh, thank
Hero.
you. Sometimes words just aren't there. I think Golden Child works just as well, but hero was the thing I was, groping for. So it depended on which parent, which of my ages. As a little kid, I was, I was just like so shut down. I was, and my mother did praise me a lot for, I got this like feedback that it was so great for me to just look perfect and pretty and to rate test. My test scores were in the highest percentile. I mean, she was like bragging about this stuff in front of me to people, and it was like so cringe. But it was what I knew, what I learned to try to get my needs met is just to be, and I tend not to like prepare for these shares because I want to get away from that. I want to be like spontaneous, and I was just sort of listening to the readings in the beginning and writing a few things down that stood out to me. And of course, I've heard these readings many times, but I was trying to listen like with fresh ears. And we lost our identities in the process. I mean, I was just still to this day, I have like I can get into these places where I'm just like confused about who I am because I was so accustomed to trying to be something in particular for someone else, and it really like got in there, it really kind of stuck. And we learned to keep our feelings down. Like I am doing so many things now to try to feel, which, if I'd known like the first part of my life, I was doing all these things to not feel. And it never occurred to me that, I would later on like be wanting to feel, and it would be hard work, or not necessarily hard work, but it would take sustained, concerted like building of habits to, coax these emotions to the surface and get in touch with them and identify them. And I'm just trying to do the opposite now of what I learned for so long. So anyway, I did my first program, in a very different way than I do this program, partly because that's how it was sort of presented of me, pre presented to me of like, these are the books, and you get a notebook, and we meet, and we do this, and it was very like, very laid out for me specifically, and that's probably was good for me at the time because I wasn't like a very high and functioning individual. It's probably helped me, get back to a place where I could show up for a meeting or, an appointment with someone and read and write and just like getting me back into life. I haven't done ACA like that at all. I'm sure I've read practically all of the Red Book, but never cover to cover. And I still plan to, and I think that's a great thing to do. But I've kind of done the well, I'm going through the Loving Parent Guidebook, which is a newer book, and I've been doing that with a group of two other fellow travelers for 2 years now. We're about halfway through, and there's this, I don't know if it's maybe the critical parent or whatever, but like there's a part of me that's much, much quieter now. That's like, it shouldn't take you that long to get through half of a book. Like, I'm not threatened by hearing that message anymore because I totally understand that part's fear and shame. Because, that's a part that learned that my self-worth depends on, what I can prove, my achievements, and so forth. And so while I love the conference-approved literature as well as so many great books in the field of like healing from PTSD and healing from the effects of immature parents or dysfunctional parents, this recovery for me is it's largely like the dysfunction, the wounds, they're in my brain, they're in my body. I carry them in my being. So my recovery needs to be holistic. It needs to be, yes, I'm gonna read some books and I'm gonna get on a Zoom meeting and but I do a lot of different things and some of it has to do, there's like experiential therapies that I've done where and I actually recently did a really great, I hope it's okay to mention, well, maybe I don't mention names, but there's a long standing therapy model that's been practiced at this center in Arizona. That's not where I went, but where I went is, modeled after that. It's a week-long codependency recovery thing. And I do want to talk about part of it because I think it's so important and maybe not emphasized enough is the concept of carried emotions and carried shame. So, when my parents abused or neglected me, when they did not meet my needs appropriately, they were inducing shame in me. And what that means is they were acting shamelessly. They were parenting in a harmful way. And that sort of injected me with their, the shame or the anger or the fear that they were feeling that caused them to behave the way they did. They just gave it to me. And so I've been carrying their anger, their shame, their fear, their guilt, their, really like the abuse that they probably or may have experienced. And so this was experiential therapy that was very specific about, and it was similar to a fourth step in that there was a lot of inventorying of every sort of like type of instance that I experienced as a child of like inappropriate, harmful, dysfunctional parenting. And then there was a part of the therapy where it was like I had me, my functional adult or my loving parent, we would say, in the room with, I had my infant in there, I had my 5-year-old and my 16-year-old, and they were witnessing me speak to my mother, my father, and my stepfather individually, one after the other, to tell them what it was like to grow up with them and how it impacted me, and then just to sort of give them back what they gave me that wasn't mine and that does not belong to me. And I think this was a very important thing for me of I certainly as an adult have times where I'm fearful, or there's healthy shame too, like if I steal something and get caught, well, that goes against my moral code and I should feel ashamed because I did a bad thing and someone saw me, and that feeling of shame alerts me to, oh, I shouldn't do that because it's not how I want to behave. But carrying, for instance, my mother's shame because, she felt shame, she got pregnant out of wedlock, and that's just an example. And I think she felt a lot of shame about that and passed that on to me. But that's hers. That has nothing to do with me. So let's see. What else can I talk about? And I also want to talk about how, especially sort of like going about my recovery from a lot of different angles, different types of therapies, including some that, some people might consider like, new age or woo-woo or alternative or what have you. Those are their words, not mine. Although I don't mind being woo-woo. Books, meetings. So many different angles. It can kind of seem like, like there's no, well, I will say, and in a lot of programs, like people do the steps, and that's how you know you're doing the program. And I have not completed the steps in this program. And so far, it has not been, I have not been called to do that. I have started a few times kind of early on, and I think I was pretty raw. And I think that, what I think is wonderful about this program is there's many different books, and we get to choose which one we want to do when and with whom. And I think, I would say like two of the biggest sort of principles that are important to me that I've learned a lot about in this program are like freedom. And by that I mean like I get to create my reality, I get to make my choices, and also acceptance. And I thought I was in acceptance for a long time before I really was. I've only started to get more in acceptance lately. And I think that there's just layers to this. And, I think this whole idea that I had to, I have a pretty good life now. There's really nothing bad happening. I have plenty to be grateful for, and plenty of abundance in my life. But one thing that's challenging right now is it's very hard for me to keep my apartment clean. It's disorderly, and sometimes it gets kind of dirty, and I struggle to stay on top of cleaning it and organizing it. And there could be different reasons for that. It doesn't really matter for the sake of this discussion. And I could actually like afford now, which I couldn't for a very long time. And I will just mention, because I think that is connected to all the rest, is that I spent many years, like off and on throughout my whole life, like really struggling financially. And I do think for me, that's been just a very entwined part of these, the wounds that I have from, a dysfunctional childhood, self-esteem, and who, lots of things intertwined with that. But I am at a place where I could pay someone a couple times a month to clean, and I still don't. And I think I have maybe fear about having someone in my space, or I don't know. It doesn't really matter exactly like why I don't hire a cleaner, or why I can't, or not, I'm gonna say can't, but why it just hasn't transpired that my home is, super clean and orderly. And I just realized recently that how much I'm using that to beat myself up. Like I don't have to love, I can wish that my apartment was cleaner and more organized, but I can also just accept that it's not right now. And yeah, where was I going with that? Acceptance. Okay, so yeah, like so to me it can seem like the recovery that I've had is very non-linear and very what's the word? Not like when there's no clear, like I didn't finish this book or get to this level and whatever. It's like undifferentiated. It's just, I do some of this and some of that. There's like peaks and valleys, and there's phases where I'm reading this book or that book, and it's very diffuse. And that can sort of trigger me to think like, oh, I'm just spinning my wheels. I'm not getting anywhere. Like, what do I have to show for 5 years in ACA? And so that is connected to trauma in a big way, because it is, especially having been raised by people who were, I mean, the negativity, it was so bleak. It was so dark and negative. And to this day, my mother's still alive, and well, I have very low contact with her because, and it's hard for me to decide about cutting her off, because I think I would prefer that, I can get to the point where her voice doesn't trigger me, or, but it still does. And, she doesn't know how to be another way, but that doesn't mean that I'm okay with her being that way to me, because she's accustomed to using me as like kind of a trash can for her, a dumping ground, like, piling her negative, not even necessarily about me, but just complaining and just being miserable in my ear. And also, yeah, the narcissism still is really, really hard to take, because it's like, it's painful, because it's all about her, and she wants me to text her every day, and I'm not going to do that. I mean, I didn't even answer the text that said, I would like a text from you every day. It would make me very happy. But I did tell my therapist, and my therapist was like, well, that's narcissism because it's all about her and making her happy. And so, yeah, getting back to, my mind at a very early age was sort of just conditioned to, see the negative or to see things in a negative light or, feel like everything's bad, basically. Everything's bad all the time. The story of my, my childhood memoir, what, right? And so, but now I know that that's just a way of seeing that I don't have to see things that way. And I actually do know that I have a lot of recovery. And I think, so if I'm thinking, oh, what have I done in 5 years in ACA? What do I have to show for it? I think, well, what does that sound like? That sounds like, self-criticism. It sounds like perfectionism. It sounds like putting myself down. And so those are tip-offs to me. And I know that I'm treating myself with so much more kindness. And I want to say this, I want to. It's been surprisingly challenging to give me and my parts the fun that they need, the fun and the enjoyment. And, I do, I work full time and I have other responsibilities. And it takes, I keep thinking of all these things I want to do, and I put them off. And I really, this is the one thing that I really, I'm, if you can't tell, I'm trying to be careful about my language. I don't say should. I don't say that I should do something. I don't say that I never do anything. I say that I want to do things and that my intentions are this or that, and that I forgive myself for not having done, or like it used to be hard for me to, or sometimes it's still hard for me to do something, and that's okay. But yeah, like being careful about how I express things is another indication of my recovery, because it's very important. It reflects my insides and what I think about myself, what I feel about myself. But yeah, I got into, what spurred this ACA recovery for me was an abusive landlord in New York City who lived in the basement below me. And I won't go into too much detail, but I was humming along in my other program at about 6, 7 years, and suddenly this, insane, monstrous, crazy man came into my life. And I was so excited because it was like my first apartment to myself after like my life fell apart from the last, like from the other thing that I was in that other program for. And within days of moving in, I was like, cowering in my apartment, afraid of him. And again, I won't go into detail, but it was not in my head. It was actually happening. However, my reaction was, I was scared to, I would wait until he was gone to leave. And if I was coming home, I would like take precaution. I'd be like, I was living in a constant state of hypervigilance. And it was like, oh, what does this remind me of? I'm tiptoeing around, this scary guy. And I was like, wow, it brought me right back to my childhood. And
5 minutes, Margaret.
thank you so much,
Thank
Tammy.
you.
Yeah, and I got into therapy with a somatic experiencing therapist for a few years who was great, and started dipping my toe into ACA. And I just feel like the people here are my tribe more than anyone. Like, you guys get it. And even the stories that aren't like mine, a lot of the feelings or the sort of like impacts on adult lives can be similar. And I hope that, anyone who's new, I hope you find some relief, inspiration, friendships, like something that will help you here. And if it's painful or uncomfortable, I don't know, just know that, yeah, I it didn't it didn't it didn't I think that's like one of the biggest ways that I know how like how much recovery I have, is that like I'm happy and relieved to be among you all. And I think the main thing is like my shame has just decreased so much, because it was like just painful for me to be anywhere. And it was just painful to be me in my skin. And that has gotten so much better. So I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much.